Welcome to Books on Air, the show that tells the story behind the book. I'm Suzanne Harris, and it's my pleasure to talk to the author about their latest project. We'll tell you where you can find them on social media, and perhaps we'll give you the opportunity to meet them. Joining me today is Josh Fensterstock, and we're going to talk about his political thriller, The Noble Rebellion. Josh, welcome.
Good evening. How you doing?
I'm doing well. You know, you're a pretty interesting guy, Josh.
Thank you.
Well, let's tell our listeners a little about you. I was impressed with your background.
Thank you. I grew up originally on Long Island in New York, attended the university at Albany and graduated there in 1999. And I wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to do with my life. And a friend of mine was running for local political office, which point I got involved with his political campaigns and sort of really got to see everything from a ground-up perspective, you know, a real take on, you know, how local politics really gets. And from that point, you know, I decided to go to law school and became an attorney and sort of dropped out of the political realm, but it is certainly an experience that, certainly left an impression on me, particularly dealing with some of the politicians themselves. I mean, you know, regardless of party or affiliations or beliefs or what have you, I think most people agree that all politicians are, interesting characters, and we'll just leave it at that.
What a lovely phrase for you to use.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I think that having that insider knowledge is always a really valuable point of view for an author. Was there some event or somebody or a reason that you decided to write the book now?
Well, the funny thing is, I really wrote it as part of a hobby, to be honest with you. And I started writing it, in 2003, shortly after my grandfather passed away, to be perfectly frank. He was a salesman when he retired. He took up some creative writing courses, you know, at the local community college and so on. And it was just something that always seemed somewhat inspiring to me. So shortly after he passed, I sat down and I wrote a couple of passages that really had nothing to do with the book itself, but they did make their way into the final book, sort of as an homage to him. And really spent 2003 to about 2008 putting the main manuscript together, another couple of years actually editing it before I went ahead and published it through Outskirts Press in 2011.
Well, let's give our listeners a little overview of the book.
Sure. Pretty much takes place in a, I guess the phrase is alternate reality, where during the State of the Union address, a terrorist who calls himself Sultan comes in and he murders every member of Congress, except for freshman congressman Max Noble. Who's been excused by the president from attending the speech because, without giving too much information away, there was an event in his life that was more important, and the arrogant President Cole felt he could get some good press by excusing Mr. Noble. Anyway, he is spared, but then Sultan comes in and takes over the United States, and he takes over all of the military facilities. He has, you know, over a million man army secretly stashed in the United States, living among us, and they now come out of the woodworks to run the country, sort of like a Taliban/ISIS type manner. And this is the new reality the United States is facing. Max, having survived the attack, is then sworn in and treated as the de facto president. He's the last living member of the entire federal government. And one of his political advisors is sort of an alt-right conservative who's, you know, big on setting up his own militia. And actually manages to put together an army for him, and they lead that into battle and so on. And it's the whole story about not only trying to take back the country on the political side of things, but there's also the human story that goes into this. With every hero needing some sort of support system, Max's college girlfriend comes back into his life and really gives him a family, something he's never had. And he uses that as his motivation to make sure to win the war, not only for the, you know, the restoration of freedom and justice, but there's a real human element in there as well, with respect to you know, love and family and so on.
I think you've really tapped into something that is a huge fear. It's almost a ripped from the theoretical alternate reality headlines. You know, someone takes over the country, and I think we're all afraid of those kinds of things because it's one of those dystopian futures that I think everyone fears.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny. The story itself is sort of structured. Max's rise and reign, if you will, is sort of structured based on a, you know, standard Greek archetype heroes. You know, someone such as Achilles. You know, so there's always going to be you had to pick something in a modern setting with a, you know, where would the real threat come from? Where would the war be? And I think, as you pointed out, there is that general undercurrent. And it's really, you know, again, I wrote the book primarily during the 2003 to 2008 period. I mean, it was really more out of a fear that resulted from the 9/11 attacks. I mean, being a New Yorker, that obviously hit very close to home for me. You know, I lost a couple of people there. You know, the big fear then was, oh my God, what if this went even further and so on? And then, you know, to sit back and sort of watch the news and watch that these type of people are in fact out there and they are doing despicable things, not only in places like Afghanistan, but now in Syria and Iraq. And you say, and they've made threats that they're coming to the United States. I mean, you know, there's definitely, as you said, that fear that sort of underlies out there. I mean, if you take public transportation anywhere, I mean, you know, everybody's kind of on edge constantly. And it's not necessarily a good thing, but, you know, you do want to provide some sort of hope that, at the end of the day, and I, you know, I think I believe this, and I think a majority of Americans believe this, and a majority of good people in the world believe that, ultimately the side of right and the side of light will win, you know, so to speak.
I love that. And I love the point that you made about the hero. There must always be an Achilles, someone that's going to come to our rescue in a novel, but the fun always of the novel is how does the author unwind the plot, and can I figure out how it's going to end, and let me see if I can think ahead or think about how this situation would really be. What's your process when you write, Josh? Are you an outline kind of guy? Jeff Deaver is an attorney, and he writes books, and Jeff outlines everything before he sits down.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I outline everything. I think I'm more visual than I am, you know, the sort of bullet point kind of guy. It's funny you ask that because when I started this, when I sort of kind of formulated the whole plot of this story, I remember drawing sort of a semicircle and saying, okay, this is the arc of the story, and this is how it's going to start, and this is how it's going to end. And then I drew, there are 36 chapters in the book, and I literally cut the semicircle into 36 pieces and just kind of wrote down the major events that would happen in each chapter to sort of bind the story together. And from there, you know, for me, the creative part was the most fun part of the process, is, you know, then sitting, you know, in front of the computer saying, all right, you know, I know that according to my little sketch here, you know, A, B, and C have to happen in this chapter, and you know, how do you get from you know, point one to point two, encompassing all three things in that experience. So, it, you know, for me, there were a bunch of starts and stops. You know, again, it was a long process in writing it. You know, I have a day job.
Yes, you do.
So, you know, it's not like you can just sit down at that point and crank out a book in 3 months. There just wasn't time for it. So there were a lot of stops and starts, but the good thing about having that visuals is that, you know, when there was a new start to be had, I knew where I left off, where I was going to go with it, and what had to happen. And along the way, you sort of, I don't have any sort of military training or background, but obviously, you know, there's a lot of military references throughout the story. I mean, it's about a war. There has to be. So there was a lot of research that went into that. Google's an amazing thing, by the way, where you could just, you know, go up and just figuring out, frankly, you know, the ranks of certain characters. You know, I mean, there's generals, there's colonels, there's lieutenants, you know, who reports to whom. The general public has a sense of that, but somebody with a non-military background can easily get confused between, you know, what's a major or, you know, versus a colonel versus a lieutenant and so on. So doing that sort of research was fun.
It has to be right, because if it's not right, absolutely, and someone's reading the book, they go, well, this is not right.
Absolutely. And even, you know, there are certain references in terms of, street names and geographical places, that are referenced. And some of them are places that I've been, so I could, you know, refer to them from memory. But, you know, there are other places where, a perfect example is when they make their way into the city of Philadelphia. What route do they take to get there? Well, you know, you have to research that. You have to say, how would they get there? If all major highways have been, you know, blocked off or by the enemy and so on, how would you get there? And like you said, it has to be right. It has to be a viable, traceable route and location and so forth. So that's the sort of research that has to go into something like this.
And writing fiction, I mean, I've written fiction myself, so I understand. For me, I sit down at the computer and the movie starts. I see the characters in my head. I see them doing things. For you too?
Absolutely. You know, I always thought that I would have, you know, if this was on the big screen, you know, who would the dream cast be?
I love it.
And you've got, you know, of course, it's like every Hollywood A-lister is playing a role in this thing, and it's the most amazing movie I've ever seen in my life.
But you do, you know, when you initially write, the characters are unique and they don't have that face. But when you start to think about it, and you start to think about if that production did happen, who do you think really would fit those parts? It's a fun game to play, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's funny because one of the hardest things to do, it's a 420-page novel, is to maintain consistency. For example, one of the characters has a scar on the left side of his face. But going through the writing process, you know, in certain chapters, you know, reference it on the right side of his face. Well, oops, you know, which is it? So you have to go back and you have to be consistent with things like that. Imagery is important. I remember, as a kid, I read the book The Natural, which of course they made into a movie with Robert Redford. And one of the hardest concepts for me was to get Robert Redford's image out of my head for, the character of Roy Hobbs. Because when you read that book, Roy Hobbs is has dark hair and brown eyes. Well, Robert Redford has anything but dark hair and brown eyes.
Exactly.
It is interesting, you know, to sort of sit down and say, you know, who would be good for this role and so on, and, you know, as an author in your mind.
I know that we piqued the interest of the listener because the book just sounds so exciting, and it sounds like one of those page turners that you can hardly put down.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that it's available on Amazon because I went to Amazon. I always do this. This is one of my habits for my interviews. I always make sure that the book really is there. So I went to Amazon and I put in the title of the book, which is The Noble Rebellion, and put your name in, and let me spell it for our listeners so that they can get it. Joshua, Joshua G with a period, and then Fensterstock. Exactly like it sounds, F-E-N, STERSTOCK. And I just put that, Amazon has a little book search feature up at the top of the page, and I just clicked on that, and the book came right up, and there's a nice little excerpt that our listeners can read to get even more of a taste of the book. Where else, Josh, can they find it?
It's also available online through barnesandnoble.com, and as well as through the original publisher's website, outskirtspress.com.
Do you have a website? Are you doing social media and websites, things like that?
There is a fan Facebook page under the Noble Rebellion, I am in the process of putting together a Twitter account with a proper Twitter handle, which is yet to be determined.
Good. Excellent. Did you write the book simply to entertain the audience, or when they close it for the last time, is there some message or something that you would like for them to take away?
I think there's a little bit of both. Certainly, with fiction, especially the high action, high political drama, the family matters and so on. There's definitely a message in there. As to, as a society, what are we doing, and how do you convey that message? And there's a theme, and it runs throughout, and I think if the reader's able to put themselves in Max Noble's shoes as, oh my gosh, what if I am the one who's called upon to put this world back together? And Max, by the way, is his character, he's only 33 years old. So he's a young man. He's got, very little life experience on which to lean. He's sort of really counting on everyone around him. So the real question is, what is he supposed to do? On the one hand, there's that pull towards, survival instincts that, okay, this is my family. These are the only people that are in my immediate circle. This is who I need to protect. And then there's the larger, macro view, if you will, of, this is about more than just me. This is about the country, and where is that fine line? And again, there are other characters in there who give him, the support necessary to sort of point him in the right direction. But that being said, there's also that desire as an author. Of course you want to entertain the audience. I mean, the reading is a lost art. In today's modern day and age, with television and movies and very few people, I feel like, pick up books to read anymore, and there's such pleasure I think from doing that. You're not locked into visual images. You can sort of let the imagination wander, when you're talking about, the character picked up a cup and drank the cup. Well, did he sip it? Did he take a big gulp of it? And then that's the sort of thing that sort of leaves the imagination to interpretation. And I think that's the enjoyable part of reading. And there are certainly, funny parts of the story. There are exciting parts of the story. And there are sad parts to the story as well. And I think that's just, part of the roller coaster of life and sort of, human emotion that you want to convey, to people, as the audience, because, we're all people.
Your enthusiasm for the book is obvious, and your enthusiasm for reading is also obvious. And of course, you're a man after my own heart, Josh, I have to say, because I feel the same way. I think books are so important, and I have to confess, I'm an old-fashioned girl. I like to hold that book in my hand. Electronic reading just doesn't have the same cachet for me for some reason. I'm not sure what. But I love talking to you. This has been such an absolute pleasure. And best of luck. Best of luck with the Noble Rebellion.
Thank you. Likewise. Thank you very much.
Josh's book, The Noble Rebellion, will be featured at Book Expo America, to be held in New York in May. Check the website to find times when Josh will be available to sign your copy. I hope you'll join me for the next Books on Air. Until then, buy a book, read a book, share a book. And thank you so much for listening.